This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
And you're listening to Geek Squawks. My name is Jeff Sandu, together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. Let's start with a story that we've mentioned about this a couple of times before. We've even talked about the possibility of an artificial intelligence becoming God one day. And I think we touched upon this about a week ago, or maybe a month ago, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
a month ago,
we did,
right?
Yes, yes.
So Anthony Lewandowski, the former Google and Uber executive, currently at the center of a bombshell lawsuit filed by Waymo, he says that he's actually serious of starting a religion centered around this super smart artificial intelligence. And he actually said that, you know, one day he do believe that people will be worshipping this super smart artificial intelligence who will eventually become God.
I almost have nothing to say about this because it's so absolutely ridiculous. I mean, this guy got into so much trouble with the
whole Google and Uber.
The information taken from one company possibly and used for another company.
Yeah.
And you know how they say that people often find religion after they've gone through a big shock in their life? Well, this guy's gone and started his own religion. I just think the whole thing is completely and utterly daft.
Well, so he says the way of the future church will have its own gospel. It's called the Manual. That itself, for me, just sounds like a horror movie in the making.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you imagine? It's like Apple's terms and conditions.
And then he was saying that part of it being smarter than us is that it will decide how it evolves, but at least we can decide how we can act around it. And he said, I would love for machines to see us as beloved elders that it respects and takes care of us. We would want this intelligence to say, humans should still have rights even though I'm in charge. And I go like, we go back again, like, who develops this AI? It goes back to, you know, a group of individuals again. It's not...
Well, yeah, of course. It's not going to be self-learning. It's going to have had some guidance from the people to begin with. So it's not like it's this omnipotent being. And also, when you look at the history of various gods across time, a lot of them demanded human sacrifices. Yeah. You know, so there's no reason to suggest that you don't have to feed your child into a mincer in the front of this machine just for the heck of it.
Mm. Lewandowski is not the only tech visionary, if you want to call him that, to worry about a super intelligent AI, which others refers to as strong AI or the singularity. We're going to hear this term a lot more, I think, in 2018. Although he prefers the term transition. That's what he says. So,
I have a feeling that this guy just wants this giant deity AI so it can say, I pardon you for nicking that data.
He is under a major lawsuit because he allegedly helped Uber to steal IP from self-driving, self-driving technology. And Lewandowski's startup's called Otto was sold to Uber for about $680 million in 2016. So he is in some very big trouble.
But that's a fair amount of money if you have to hire some lawyers.
Yeah, definitely. Now let's move on to some strange things from Netflix about public viewing habits.
Yes, well, Netflix has recently conducted a survey into the way its users use the data. We all know about Netflix and chill. Now, what they're talking about is Netflix in public. It seems to be that their users increasingly are using the phones out and about. And we know that Netflix now has the download option as well.
I love it.
Yeah, exactly. So you can watch the shows on your commute, on public transport.
Yeah.
So Netflix is actually taking a lot of data about how people use these devices and where they actually watch. So it knows, for example, that quite a large subset of its users uses them in public restrooms, for example. So the company's getting into all kinds of data, but also it's changing the way that that people are looking at the kind of public and private space. So one of the things, you know, people used to be a little bit reserved and embarrassed about the kind of content that they were showing on their phone or the tablet. So if it was quite explicit, you'd see the person angling it away.
Yeah.
But apparently now people don't do that. So they're becoming a lot more bold with the content as well. But also, I think it's something like 11% of people have admitted that they've been watching over somebody else's shoulder and it's actually ruined the ending of a show for them that they were currently following. And apparently up to 22% of people are willing to watch somebody else's content over their shoulder on a train or public transport as well. So you have all of these strangers that you don't know who are also piggybacking on your technology. So, you know, we often talk about the algorithms in terms of the ratings that kind of thing. But it's just interesting to see how much detail Netflix is going into to see where it's consuming and also how much it's changing our kind of social behavior. Mm.
Public restrooms was very, very weird place to be watching Netflix.
Well, yeah, precisely. But obviously, the people who answered the survey, that's obviously a popular location for them to watch Stranger Things.
You know how Netflix is an OTP player or you know over the top player. I think now Netflix will have a secondary option, an OTS, over the shoulder Netflix.
No, exactly. But that's exactly what it seems to be.
Yeah.
And also the people who do watch over people's shoulder, they don't feel any embarrassment either.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, we're really changing people's kind of social behavior in these settings.
Yeah. It'll be so weird. You know, a few years ago, it would have been weird. Like, why are you watching my screen?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and it used to be when that horrible thing if you used to read a newspaper and somebody didn't know was reading it, even somebody you do know is reading over your shoulder. It's annoying. But yeah, you're watching, you know, you're catching up on Lucifer or something and somebody's watching over your shoulder and maybe making a comment to you about the action. It's a bit odd.
It is a bit odd. Well, speaking of odd, gene editing. We've spoken about CRISPR before, which we still don't quite understand how it works, but...
Yeah, we're going to get Richard Bradbury back on at some point in the next few weeks to investigate his claim that he understands
Did he say he understands CRISPR?
I can't remember if it was... No, it was Bitcoin, wasn't
Bitcoin,
it?
Yeah, he said he understood Bitcoin. He was afraid of CRISPR, but he does fully understand Bitcoin and how it works, but
we'll have to have an on-the-spot segment just to torture him.
Now, scientists for the first time have tried gene editing inside the body of a human in a bold attempt to permanently change a person's DNA. But this is not something crazy to do, something like we were mentioning earlier about, you know, giving you a super ability. This is actually trying to cure a disease. Now, the experiment was done just earlier this week on a 44-year-old Californian guy named Brian Maddox. Through an IV, he received billions of copies of a corrective gene and a genetic tool to cut his DNA in precise spots. So that itself, because how do you cut?
But that's the whole point. Yeah. Even this is a huge article, but it never says
it doesn't
how
give
it happens.
Yeah, no
a genetic
details.
Tool that helps to cut the thing in 10,000 copies.
What is this genetic tool?
Because nobody understands it.
So science of it, whether it worked or not, may only come in the next coming months. So we will actually know probably in about 3 months. Apparently that's when tests will see whether it's been successful or not. But we've spoken about how, you know... I think even the start of Matt's Plane, we did, you know, Dystopia and Utopia, and we talked about, you know, the 100s and, you know, how we've got super abilities.
Yeah, enhancing people and giving them different abilities. But it's very true with this. And it's like I said, we are getting into this very extreme form of medicine where, I mean, the idea of going in and changing somebody's DNA, even though we have no idea how, is absolutely incredible. It's astonishing.
But I think, you know, this is probably the start of it, as you mentioned, that medical is changing a lot because, you know, obviously the first step to doing, you know, gene editing is to cure diseases because that's what they want to do. They're just planning on doing gene editing to eliminate any diseases that you may get. But that's just the first step because then the second step would be like, ooh, what else can we do since it's very successful? If it becomes successful in the next few years, the next step is then what can we add on?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it could be that you tinker with something and you can grow a third arm. You know, there are all kinds of really weird things that we could do with this. I mean, a lot of it has genuine medical benefit. You could... help people with their metabolism so that they, you know, people who are prone to putting on weight, people who have genetic diseases like dementia all of these things. There's a lot that we can do, but you can use all of those same things to boost people's ability and, like I said, to give them abilities that they shouldn't necessarily have. You know, how can the, if you decide to increase your muscle mass, for example, by 30 or 40 or 50%, can your body actually sustain that? Can your skeleton actually sustain that over a long period? So it's going to be a long time before we actually realize what the limits are of what we can do with this technology. We're going to be able to do a lot of things that can cause a lot of instant damage, short-term gain, and probably long-term damage. It's going to take us a long time to figure out what the balance is, I think.
Well, I'm going to try and explain how this whole thing works here. So, you know, CRISPR's got a lot of attention recently, but this study is using a different technique, and it's called the zinc finger nucleuses. They're like molecular scissors that seek and cut a specific piece of the DNA. The therapy has three parts, the new gene and two zinc finger proteins. Again, I'm completely losing myself here. Really.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the DNA instructions for each part are placed in a virus that has been altered to not cause infection, but to ferry them into cells.
That kind of makes sense.
Yeah. And then billions of copies of these are given through a vein.
Okay, again, that makes sense.
And then they travel to the liver where the cells use instructions to make the zinc fingers and prepare the corrective genes.
That's the bit that doesn't make
getting a bit
any
confusing
sense.
Here
yeah,
now.
Exactly.
So, yeah, you can read up the article. We'll post it online, but
the idea that you deliver all of this stuff and it creates a pair of genetic scissors in the liver itself. That then go out and do that operation on their own. I'm not doubting that it's not true. It doesn't make any sense. It is kind of like magic, right?
It is. Well, we do have one product that will be on that's on Indiegogo at the moment, and it's quite magic. I'm absolutely fascinated by this. It's King of the Crowd. We'll be back after this. BFM 89.9.
Barry fronts Motown. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
And we're back. It is Geek Squawks. My name is Jeff Sandu, together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. Now, King of the Crowd. And this, I think, could be my favorite King of the Crowd of this year, I think. But unfortunately, I don't think I could get it.
No, you can't. Well, this is a bit of a cheat of a King of the Crowd, because we're actually giving you something that you can't
you
can't take part in. The electronics manufacturer Bose has gone on to Indiegogo to use it as a platform, not so much to raise money or to raise funds, but to bring people into a sleep study that it wants to do. So what it's doing is it's come up with a range of sleep-aiding wireless buds that you put in, and it blocks out sounds and it gives you kind of nice sounds to help
soothing
you.
Soothing sounds.
What's interesting about this is obviously Bose is a big manufacturer. It's very, very well funded, so it doesn't have to come out onto this kind of platform. It's interesting to see the company offering the devices, the prototype devices, at very cheap prices. Well, they're still
for Bose.
For Bose quality, it's very cheap. Yeah. They're about $150 up to $180. And they only made about 4,000 units available, which have all been subscribed in the first couple of days. But it's really kind of fun and interesting. I mean, again, it goes back to what we were talking about before the break in the show about companies actually becoming a little bit more aware of their audience and what their audience is saying. And also, I think with a lot of these sleep products in the past, we've covered them a lot on this show as well. You give them out to people and they don't really work. They're blocky and they're uncomfortable. Yeah. So this is actually quite a major, very large consumer study that people are paying to be part of. But it's good that Bose is getting that kind of feedback from people and bringing them into the design process for what will eventually become a consumer product in a couple of years' time.
Because I would definitely pay $150 for one of these to be part of the study.
I mean, if listeners want to know what they are, they're basically a bit like the Bose kind of Bluetooth headphones.
Yeah.
There's no cord around them. Each one has a very tiny zinc battery inside that can power for up to two nights. It pairs with your phone by Bluetooth. As far as I'm aware, it doesn't really play music and that kind of thing, but it has a small amount of onboard flash memory storage on each device, so it can play various sounds that you want, and it uses the noise cancelling technology to block out sound, so you can get a nice restful sleep. And the purpose of having people involved in this is because noise cancelling technology can be a bit brutal on your ears. It actually...
You can feel a lot of pressure.
There's a lot of pressure because they're actually blasting sound waves at your head to replace the noise. So you're still actually in a noisy environment. Yeah. It's just that you don't really register it so much. It's not so much about making it quiet for you. So this is really interesting, the way that they've gone about doing this. If you're interested in looking at the project, you can go to Indiegogo and look for the Bose Noise Masking Sleep Buds. As I said, unfortunately,
it's sold out.
It's sold out. Yeah, I mean, I think it was oversubscribed within sort of 2 or 3 days. It's still got 3 weeks left on its run.
Just to show you.
Just to show you. But it is interesting, and I'm the same. I'd have liked to have been part of this as well.
Yeah. Anyways, let's talk about Amazon and their future retail grocery store called the Amazon Go, the one where you could just walk in. Take a product, put it on your. Well, you don't even have to put it in the basket. You could just walk out and
walk in and walk out.
Walk in and walk out. And remember, at the first part of it, we were talking about, oh wow, this is very cool. They even launched a very cool video, and then a few weeks later, when they did launch the store, but it's still a closed beta store, there were a lot of problems. Apparently, you know, they couldn't the machine couldn't register when someone took the product off a certain off shelf A and then put it back in shelf B. It just got really confused.
And I think the whole system couldn't cope with more than 20 people at a time inside the store as well.
But now, though, they say it is ready. It is ready for prime time because they have worked out all these nitty-gritty errors that it has. 7 months is what it basically they've been taking just to sort of have this just walk out technology. And they say that it has improved dramatically. It also has gotten people to gotten family members to come in and identify which should be the payer instead of having a confusion of like, oh, there's like three people walking in here and they're all part of this family, so who do I charge?
Yeah.
And then it also had a problem of where, you know, kids would just, you know, run up to a shelf and take some things and run around with it. So
because it would confuse the senses if too many people were moving too fast in one physical environment. Yeah.
Mm. So apparently now the algorithms, they've nailed it. According to a person familiar with the situation, they have correctly identified the employers and, you know, charging to their Amazon accounts, even though they were, it's kind of like a closed beta. They were kind of like in the obscure behind a yellow polystyrene. So Amazon has sort of declined to, you know, talk more about you know, what's going to happen in terms of the current way of building some things like this. But it is going to represent like a future here of just going into a store, taking something. It is becoming a reality because earlier on we were talking about this is going to take a long time. 7 months, though.
Yeah,
it's a fast
they've done it a lot faster than I thought. But it's kind of weird because up until recently, I didn't realize that kind of store didn't exist because I've always just walked into stores and and walked out. I just thought that's how they work.
Yeah, well, there's no cashier in this store. No one at all.
Yeah, I don't use one either.
Well, it is unclear yet to see how Amazon Go will be expanding, but the one that they have in Seattle would be the sort of like, I think, a test bed,
yeah. And we'll see, I mean, how on a serious note, I mean, this is part of Amazon's rolling dominance of pretty much everything in the retail sphere.
The Whole Foods market and that.
Well, I mean everything. I mean going into supermarkets because once you do this, you can do it with any kind of product. You can imagine vast Amazon warehouses where people just wander in and take out whatever they want. You know, whether it's hedge trimmers or whether it's a pint of milk. It is quite incredible how much power I think that Amazon is going to have in the future. And you can imagine that pretty much all the high street retailers disappear and you'll just go into an Amazon depot to do absolutely everything.
Mm. So if you, in case you're still not sure how Amazon Go works, basically shoppers visiting the store will scan their smartphones upon entering. Cameras and the shelf sensors will then work together to figure out which items have been removed and who removed them. And there will be no need for tracking devices such as, you know, radio frequency chips or embedded in the merchandises. When shoppers leave, the algorithms will total the order and charge to your account straight away.
Yeah, it's kind of disappointing. I was hoping that Jeff Bezos would be there following people around going, "Oi, have you paid for that?"
They should have like a sound, like a speaker.
Oh, his voice.
Yeah, his voice at the
Put
speaker.
Put it back.
Put it back.
You can't afford that. I can see your credit history.
Now, let's very quickly talk about Twitter. And it's losing, a lot of people have been losing its verified status, that blue tick that you get under its new guidelines.
Whenever you see a story about Twitter, it's just a horror story in the making. All of this happened because the guy who organized the Charlottesville rally achieved verified status for his account, which in Twitter means, you know,
you're legit.
You're a famous
voice to
person.
Be heard,
exactly. Twitter says they're not an endorsement, but it does kind of look like an endorsement.
It pushes you up way higher in the search ranking and stuff. Yeah,
precisely. Yeah, exactly. You get favored by the company's algorithms. So now they're kind of backpedaling and unverifying a lot of these people, and that should be a positive story.
But
when any of the journalists inquired with Twitter what behavior will make you lose your verified status, again, they just clam up and won't give any information. So it just appears to be arbitrary. And we've seen Facebook go through all of this over the last couple of years. And the only response is to be a lot more open about the policies and to put more effort into protecting people.
Yeah.
But every time we see a story with Twitter, it's about Twitter doing precisely the wrong thing when somebody asks them for information. Mm.
So apparently Twitter declined to provide The Guardian with additional information about how they plan to implement the new policies, such as number of violations required for a de-verification, which is crucial actually to know, like how many times do I...
It's like, not even how many times do I, but how many times does that person have to transgress in order to be decertified, because that's what we're talking about.
Mm. They also declined to mention on whether users will be warned before they lose their blue tick as well. So there you go. Another story from Twitter, not a very good one. GeekTunes, Matt, what do we have on today's show?
We have a British indie pop band, Four Girls. They've been around for the last sort of couple of years, making a very kind of nice retro-ish kind of 1980s kind of indie sound. This is Goat Girl with Cracker Drool.
BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.